Talk show.
Talk back.
Talk radio.
Talk your talk.
Walk your talk.
KGNU talk.
Call in.
Call in and talk.
Call in and connect.
Connections.
Friday mornings at 8:30.
On KGNU.
And good Friday morning, everybody. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Roger Wendell. It is the 30th of January, and the time is 8:33. And this morning, we're going to be talking about Western China and basically a Muslim population there of the Uyghur people in Xinjiang province, covering about one-sixth the land area of China, and kind of the problems they're going through, a little bit reminiscent, in my opinion, of what Amy Goodman was talking about this morning when she did those long interviews with Black Panthers from America's Past 50 years ago. Somewhat reminiscent of that, but I encourage you to stay tuned, listen, and you're going to learn quite a bit about what's going on in Western China, a lot of what we never hear here in the United States in our media. So my guest this morning is Mr. Alim Setoff. He is the president of the Uyghur American Association, based in Washington, D.C., and he's also the director of the Uyghur Human Rights Project. Mr. Setoff has been campaigning for the human rights and religious freedom of the Uyghur people since he came to the United States in 1996. Alim Setoff holds a master's degree in public policy and a law degree from Regent University. He's been widely published in numerous journals like the Huffington Post, Al Jazeera, and the Wall Street Journal, and is often quoted or interviewed on the BBC World Services, C-SPAN, and other news wires. Alim Setoff, good morning. Welcome to KGNU.
Good morning. Thank you very much for your invitation to be on your show.
Excellent. Glad to have you here. What I usually like to do on this program is start out with a kind of a thumbnail sketch and history, as it were, of the subject and the area and the people we're going to be talking about. But first, for clarification, is the area that we're going to talk about best known as East Turkestan, Chinese Turkestan, or the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, or Uyghurstan? Which one is which?
In fact, the name of the territory should be called East Turkestan. But after Chinese occupation, they changed the name into Xinjiang. Xinjiang in Chinese literally means new territory. And since 1955, this territory, which is historically not part of China, became what is today the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. But Uyghur people have never enjoyed any kind of autonomy under China's communist rule.
Well, certainly out of respect, we'll go with East Turkestan, and I appreciate that description. Can you give us kind of an idea of how big it is? I mentioned earlier, I think, or at least I was thinking of it, it's about twice or maybe 2.5 times the size of Texas. But tell us a little bit about the geography and the layout, the Taklamakan Desert, the Tien Shan Mountains. How big is East Turkestan, and what's it all about?
Yeah, East Turkestan is a pretty big area. It is, as you introduced, it's 1/6 of today's China. And the size is, yes, more than 2 times of Texas or 2 times of California. And it's kind of similar to the size of Alaska, actually. So it's a pretty big chunk of territory. And it is located in northwestern part of today's China. It's really part of Central Asia rather than China. Historically, this territory, including today's independently Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, all called it Turkestan. And the Tsarist Russians, they expanded into Central Asia and occupied the western part, so the Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan. And it became part of the Tsarist Russian Empire, later became the Soviet Union. But when Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, all of this countries became independent. The Western Turkestan became independent. They divided into several independent states today. But in 1884, the Manchu-Qing dynasty, the Manchus people from today's northeastern part of China, who were not Chinese, who occupied China for nearly 300 years, who also occupied us. And that's how we became part of the Manchu Empire. Then Chinese forces came, occupied us. So they occupied the eastern Turkestan. So that's the historic name of this place. And this is a very beautiful territory. It is far from any ocean or sea. It's a landlocked territory. But in the northern part, it's very much like Colorado, if you will. It's great mountains, all kinds of trees and lots of animals. We have rivers. It's very, very beautiful. And we have a couple of huge mountains, like Rocky-sized mountains, dividing East Turkestan. One is, we call it in the Uyghur language, called Tangritag, which the Chinese call Tianshan Mountains. It's heavenly mountains. And we also have the Kunlun Mountains in the south, and we also have Pamir Mountains that's dividing us from Afghanistan and some other countries there. And in the south, we have Taklamakan Desert. That's the second largest desert in the world after the Sahara Desert in Africa. So in the south, it's desert, it's dry, but this territory is a very wealthy territory. And above the ground, we produce all kinds of crops and fruits, cotton and whatnot. And it also produces a lot of gold. Most gold from today's China comes from us. And also China's almost half of the oil and the natural gas coal reserves come from us. And a lot of strategic and rare minerals that China sells to the world come from us. So this is a very wealthy territory. And also, because of its location, it is China's buffer zone. It's also China's gateway to Central Asia, Eurasia, Middle East, South Asia. And it's also a conduit to many pipeline gas and oil pipelines all the way from Russia, Central Asia, to rest of China. So it's an extremely and strategically important territory. That's why the Chinese repression of the Uyghurs is so harsh as a result of this, because of this wealth and its strategic importance.
And we're certainly going to take time this morning to delve deeper into what the Uyghur people are experiencing, basically what I believe is Chinese, under Chinese domination. But just backing up a little bit, you mentioned the benefits, the resources in East Turkestan. Just kind of on a side note, are the Uyghur people benefiting from the oil and coal and other resources you just mentioned? Is there any direct benefit for the Uyghur people?
Since Chinese communists took power in 1949 and occupied East Turkestan with the support of the Soviet Union, actually. Otherwise, Chinese communists would not have been able to occupy us. Since then, the Chinese government claimed, as the communist government claimed, all the land belongs to the state, including all the resources. So basically, the relationship between the current Chinese communist government and the Uyghur people, or East Turkestan, it's a colonial relationship. So in a colonial relationship, what happens is, you know, the colonizers, like the Chinese communists, they occupy somebody's land, and they demonize the people.
Whoops, Salim, did we lose you there? Halim Setrov, can you still hear me?
Yes.
Halim, could you back up about a minute? It sounds like you cut out for just a moment.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you now. You sound good. Go ahead.
Great, sorry. So because, as I said, this is a colonial relationship, so the Chinese communists occupied East Turkestan with the Soviet support. Then in order to control, colonize, and dominate the region, the Chinese government transferred millions of Han Chinese people into East Turkestan, just like it did into Tibet, for example. So in 1943, there were only 3% Chinese. Now they're half of the population. Uyghur people at the time were 83, same thing in Tibet. And all the resources in the colonial relationship, what they do is they take all the resources for free, whether that's gold, uranium, coal, oil, or gas, or anything that benefits their motherland. So the Chinese take them all to China, Chinese motherland, mainland China, and they leave absolutely nothing to the Uyghur people. But when the Uyghur people complain, the Chinese government will accuse them of separatism, religious extremism, sometimes terrorism, things like that. That has been ongoing for the last six decades. So Uyghur people, other indigenous populations in East Turkestan, or even the Tibetan people in Tibet, they have never benefited from the abundant natural resources in their own homeland. Plus, in addition to that, the Uyghur people are one of the poorest in China, even though their land produces so much resources. Plus, the Chinese government intentionally also demonize the Uyghur people and say they are poor, they are backward, they don't have education. That's why Chinese people should go there, help the people. But actually, they are there to control, colonize, dominate, take everything to their motherland.
8:44 is the time. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Connections. My guest this morning is Alim Setov. He's president of the Uyghur American Association. And we're talking about Chinese domination of the Uyghur people in East Turkestan, inviting listeners to join the conversation. Ava's here this morning taking calls for us live on air at 303-442-4242. Again, if you want to join the conversation, have any questions or comments, 303-442-4242. We'll try to get to the phones a little bit later on. And also, just for clarification, for those of you not driving down I-25, if you happen to be in front of your desktop, the spelling of Uyghur, if you want to Google that, is U-Y-H-G-U-R. Again, U-Y-H-G-U-R, and that's the Uyghur people of East Turkestan, which is in western China. And Alim, I wanted to back up just a little bit more for just some more history. Give us an idea of how long the Uyghur people have been, or the Uyghurs rather, have been not only in East Turkestan, but in these independent states in the area. How far back is the history and their living in that area and on the land?
The Uyghur people have always been independent throughout our history. We had our own, not just kingdoms or city-states, but even empires, more powerful, very strong to even challenge China's Tang Dynasty. Actually, it was the Uyghur Empire that supported the Chinese Tang Dynasty and suppressed the rebellion and saved the neck of Chinese Tang Dynasty that the Chinese government, as Chinese people, are so proud of today. So historically, we live side by side with the Chinese and other groups, Tibetans, Mongols, as neighbors. And the Tibetans, Mongols were not also Chinese. They were incorporated into part of today's China by the Chinese communists, by Mao Zedong, basically, by pointing a gun at every Uyghur, Tibetan, Mongolian head to be part of this country called People's Republic of China, even though we were not willing. And as in the last century, Uyghur people actually declared independence twice. First in 1933, in order to break away from the Chinese worldwide control of East Turkestan. Then in 1944, Uyghur people also rebelled against nominal Chinese rule at the time and declared independence in East Turkestan. And that independent state survived until 1949. But at the time, it was, when we think about the time, it was 1945, the Second World War was over. And East Turkestan is located in Central Asia, and nobody knew what was happening at the time. The Uyghurs declared independence, tried to survive and save their independence. But Uyghurs at the time were also squeezed between the powerful Soviet Union and the new communist China. And so the Soviet Union supported Mao Zedong's Red Army to get ready and occupy East Turkestan. And Stalin basically forced East Turkestan leadership to accept Chinese rule, even though we had a six-year independent state. East Turkestan leaders refused that. Then the plane allegedly carrying them to Soviet Union territory at the time crashed, and president, vice president, and the military leaders all died on the plane. Then Chinese Red Army communist troops moved in East Turkestan and occupied East Turkestan. And at the time, some other Uyghur leaders, of course, had no choice they were willing to fight the Chinese, but they knew if they fight, then the Soviet Union would move in, occupy East Turkestan. So it was a futile effort to resist Chinese occupation. So that's how Chinese communists occupied East Turkestan, and recently. But before then, the Uyghur people, just like the Tibetans, Mongols, we had our separate existence, separate states, and we were never under Chinese rule before. And this is aside from a short period of KMT rule, this is the first time the Uyghur people, similarly Tibetans and the Mongols, came under Chinese rule. Historically, if you look at China, of course, China is in Chinese, it's Zhongguo. In English, it's sometimes called the Middle Kingdom. China is really, the Zhongguo really means in Chinese, doesn't mean it's the center of the world, like a middle. It's really the Middle Plains, they call it Zhongyuan. That's a country based upon the Middle Plains. That's in the heart of today's China. If you Google the Great Wall of China, actually successive Chinese emperors, it's not the Genghis Khan, the Mongols, or the Nur Hajj, the Manchus who occupied China, built the wall. It was successive Chinese emperors, they built that wall. That wall is actually China's historic border, because they built that wall to keep out foreigners or aliens outside of the wall. That's foreign territory. Inside of the wall, that was Chinese territory. But if you look at it today, the Great Wall of China lies within much inner side of the Chinese territory. The outside, they occupied so much places, they call those territories as historically part of China. Basically, after Chinese communists took power, they rewrote the history of Tibet, East Turkestan, Southern Mongolia, Manchuria, places like that, to make these territories as part of Chinese territory since 2,000-3,000 years, which are all fabrications and the lies.
Let's talk about the Chinese just a little bit here. Basically, the ethnic Han Chinese, often brag to the world, and I think it's even on their currency, about their 55 recognized minorities. Give us a sense of that. Being a minority in China, is there, whether you're Uyghur or Tibetan or one of the 53 other minorities, is there much recognition? Are Uyghurs treated differently than the other minorities? Or if you're a minority in China, you're pretty much in bad shape. Is that the case?
Yeah. First of all, China, we should know, is not a democracy. It is still ruled by the Chinese Communist Party, although the country is no longer a communist or socialist state. It's pretty much a capitalist country now. And China is dominated by the Han Chinese. And the Han Chinese are actually the Chinese. And there are no Uyghur Chinese, Tibetan Chinese, or Mongolian Chinese. We don't consider us as Chinese. But China, since 92% or more people are the Han or the Chinese people, so the Uyghurs, Tibetans, the Mongols, and other so-called 55 ethnic minorities, they're only about 7-8% of China's population. So compared to the Han population, we are extremely small. And China is also, because of this, since the Chinese government is also a Han government, it, of course, prioritizes, if you will, the wishes of the Han people. They try to impose, through cultural imperialism, impose Chinese culture upon the Uyghurs, Tibetans, Mongols, and other minorities, and systematically assimilate them into the Han Chinese culture, so that the minorities, although they exist by name, probably on paper, but not in reality anymore. But today, in China, the many other minority groups, they have already lost their language, their culture, their way of life and tradition. They're already assimilated into the Chinese society. They're not any different from the Han. They speak the Han language. They don't speak their own language anymore. And one prime example is the Manchus, who ruled China for nearly 300 years. The Manchus, historically, they were really a small minority people, but they were very powerful people. That's why they were able to conquer China, a big country with a big population. But they were assimilated into the Chinese population, especially after Chinese Communists took power, because Chinese Communists were afraid of the Manchus because they were powerful people. But now in China, there are people who claim they are Manchus, but there is almost nobody speaks Manchu. Nobody, not a living human being in China or the world, speaks Manchu language. It's dead officially. And so China has been very successful. So China also wants to, the second success is pretty much the Mongols in what China calls Inner Mongolia. And there is strong intermarriage, and a lot of Mongols adopt Chinese culture also because of their proximity to Chinese heartland. And the other two people who resist such cultural imperialism and assimilation efforts are the Uyghurs and the Tibetans. That's why the Chinese government has big problems with the Tibetans and the Uyghurs. And if you look at the Chinese, as you say, the Chinese currency, the renminbi they call, you see five groups. You see Uyghurs, Tibetans, Mongols, Han, I think Hui or another, so five. These five are the majority people who were supposedly have founded the People's Republic of China. The other minority groups, they're just too small, although they were recognized by the Chinese state. But now the Chinese government argues that Uyghurs or Tibetans or Mongols, they're just one of the 56. True, but at the same time, it's not true. And unlike other small minorities who did not have their state in the past, who did not have a designated territory, who did not have a separate existence outside of the Han rule. No. And the Uyghurs, Tibetans, and Mongols, we always were different. We had our own country, our own state, lived as China's neighbors, not under Chinese rule. So so with the Chinese government, China is not as big as it is, as I explained. The border is China's Great Wall. But China, communist Chinese, inherited the vast empire established by the Manchus, who conquered Tibet, East Turkestan, Mongolia, all these territories. But instead of giving the people, occupied people, Tibetans, Uyghurs, Mongols, the right of self-determination to decide their own political future, the Chinese government occupied these territories and treat them as colonies. And that's why since 1949, the Chinese Communists always have had big problems, big tensions with the Uyghurs, Tibetans, Mongols, and others. But the case of Tibetans, of course, is very well known in the world, and because of his own Dalai Lama, the government exile, they were able to flee Tibet in 1959. And for the past 50 years, they were able to basically inform the international community, let the international community understand the plight of the Tibetan Chinese occupation, colonization, and the current cultural genocide that's ongoing. But Uyghurs and the Mongols, we were not able to come out earlier, as early as the Tibetans. And the Uyghurs were able to come out of that landlocked territory only in the last 10, 20 years ago. So that's why we've been able to campaign for the freedom of the Uyghur people, let the international community know it's not just the Tibetans that who are suffering under Chinese rule. It's not just Tibet that's being occupied by the Salta, East Turkestan, Southern Mongolia, all of its territories, and historically these territories do not belong to China. So China and the Chinese government has attempted to cover up the existence of these problems, used brute force to deal with any kind of Uyghur, Tibetan, especially Uyghur and Mongolian unrest, and threw the issue under the rug. But it has never solved the problem. So that's why the problem has never gone away or faded. And it is always there. That's why it's getting bigger and bigger, and the Chinese government, especially after Xi Jinping became China's new president, has been extremely ruthless in dealing with the Uyghur people. But the situation is getting worse. The tension is running high. And it seems as the Chinese government has not found a viable solution to the problem, not just in Tibet now, in East Turkestan and Southern Mongolia. It's getting worse.
And I want to interject here in preparation for the program. It appeared to me in my study that when you say worse and it's a bad situation, we're actually talking about the systematic killing and murder of Uyghur people in East Turkestan. So I hope we can take some time this morning to address that as well. But we've had Julian and some other callers waiting patiently here. Let's take a moment and go to the phones. Julian, good morning. You're on Connections.
Hi, good morning. This is very fascinating. I'm very grateful to hear this, and I'm a follower of the Dalai Lama and have the Tibetan teacher here in Boulder, Lopan Rinpoche. My question that I'm curious about is what percentage of the Uyghurs are Buddhist and maybe Muslim, and I also see a parallel of what China is doing with the Tibetans and the Uyghurs and Mongolians, and what the American government did to the American Indians when they went through and took over the Native American land and displaced them and put them aside and decided that these people aren't important. I see great parallels of what China did and what U.S. government did. And thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Julian.
You're welcome. Aline.
Yep. Aline?
Yes. Thank you, Julian, for your question and your comment. Yes, the treatment of the Uyghur people and the treatment of the Tibetan people by the Chinese Communist government is very similar. But because of the prominence of His Holiness the Dalai Lama and international awareness of the terrible situation of the Tibetan people, China is more careful in Tibet. And this, of course, doesn't mean China will not repress Tibetans. The Chinese government do. But they're more careful, more subtle, because there will be more international condemnation. And plus, Tibetans are Buddhists. Of course, in a way, in the West, Buddhists are perceived as more peaceful. And historically, Uyghur people had believed in a number of different religions. Uyghurs believed in shamanism, Manichaeism, Buddhism, and the last religion Uyghurs accepted after the Arabs conquered Central Asia is Islam. So the majority of Uyghur population today are Muslims. But if you ask Tibetans and others, the Uyghur people did play an extremely important role in basically spreading Buddhism to China, to the Chinese. Now, today, people think, oh, Chinese are Buddhists. It's like and the Buddhism from India, they came through East Turkestan. They can't just go directly, you know, to the Han Chinese. And that's why the Uyghur people were Buddhists. And they had Buddhist cultural centers, Buddhist, you know, like Dunhuang was at the time, was part of the Uyghur territory control. And we also have Turfan. We also have Kusan. If you go to these cities, you would see inside caves, you would see Buddhist wall paintings. They painted murals, basically. And those were painted by the Uyghur people. You would see the facial features are completely different from the Han or other Buddhists because they have very bushy beards and Indo-European features. These are the Uyghurs. But then, nearly 1,000 years ago, in the 11th century, as I state, you know, the Arabs, I think it was the Abbasids who expanded and controlled Central Asia. That was the reason Uyghurs were converted to some extent forcibly into Islam. Then Uyghurs, it took 400 or 500 years for Uyghurs to become Muslim population. But because of the difference of religion, Uyghurs are Muslim, then after 9/11, the Chinese government saw that as a golden opportunity to justify its colonial repression against the Uyghur people.
I recall that immediately after 9/11, I was astonished. I didn't know that much about China or East Turkestan, although I had visited there a couple of months prior. I was astonished how quickly the Chinese came out and kind of aligned themselves, at least philosophically, with the United States as far as terrorism. And it turns out, as best I can tell, this is based on the Uyghur population and the Uyghur people being associated generally with Islam. Maybe you could expand on that a little bit. I wonder if that caught you by surprise back after 9/11 when the Chinese came out so strongly in favor of what the U.S. was doing. It amazed me.
Yes, on that tragic day, 9/11, actually, I was in Washington in my office. I saw on CNN everything that took place, killing more than 3,000 innocent Americans. And I was very saddened along with the Uyghur people. And the Chinese government, again, is an authoritarian, communist, brutal regime, just like Soviet Union. I don't know why people love China so much. It's the same communists. But this government has always been repressing peaceful Uyghurs, peaceful Tibetans, peaceful Mongolians, and even their peaceful Han Chinese people. The Chinese communists killed more Han Chinese people than any other foreign governments, in fact, including the Japanese who invaded China in the 30s. So the Chinese government, it's in a way illegitimate communist government that had no legitimacy to even rule East Turkestan, Tibet, and not alone just to justify the repression. Overnight, after 9/11, they saw that as a golden opportunity and a pretext to justify the repression against the Uyghur people because the Uyghur people happen to be Muslims. So they began to say China is a victim of terrorism, the Uyghurs have links to Al-Qaeda and this, and that making up a lot of stories and fabrications, which China is really good at, than trying to support the U.S. war on global terror as a quid pro quo so that the U.S. would keep quiet on Chinese repression of the Uyghur people. Then China unleashed the campaign, a wholesale attack upon the peaceful Uyghur people, arrested, imprisoned, and executed hundreds of Uyghurs on so-called terror charges, those Uyghurs who are not happy with China's communist, atheistic, and brutal rule in their own homeland. That's what happened. They took advantage of that, and the Chinese media, their propaganda began to spread the lies about the Uyghurs are terrorists everywhere. The Chinese government calls His Holiness the Dalai Lama terrorist as well. So we know how untrue Chinese claims about this allegations are. So they have used the global war on terror since 2001 until now to justify their heavy-handed repression of the Uyghur people. In addition to that, they introduced a number of policies, repressive policies against the Uyghur people. Then they started banning the use of the Uyghur language since kindergarten all the way to university. Now, Uyghur students in class, they cannot speak to each other in the Uyghur language. In college, they cannot wear their own Uyghur headgears or scarves. In East Turkestan, they cannot. And these are all banned by the Chinese government and school authorities. And then they have banned pretty much everything. Now, a Uyghur man, for example, cannot grow a beard. The Uyghurs, as I explained, we are Indo-European. We are very bushy people. We have a lot of facial hairs, just like Americans. And Han Chinese, for some reason, they have less facial hair. But the state policy now is Uyghurs cannot look religious. So if you have a beard, you look religious. And interestingly, a lot of foreigners, and including Americans who go study in our country, occupied by China, they don't even dare to grow a beard because of the Chinese government repression. Because we have blonde Uyghurs, blue-eyed Uyghurs. They look very much like Americans and Europeans. So the Chinese security police sometimes mistake Americans and Europeans as Uyghurs and beat them up if they have beards. Things like that happen all the time. And the Uyghur women, they cannot wear even a scarf. It has nothing to do with religion so much, but it's just the Uyghur culture. They wear a scarf. It's not like the Arabic hijab kind of. It's just a scarf on their head. It can be any kind. When they cook, they don't want their hair falling to the food. It's part of Uyghur culture. They cannot even wear that today. And anybody who has a beard and like hat, scarf, things like that, they are not allowed to board a bus, to board an airplane or train. They are not allowed to enter any government buildings.
So just for clarification then, if you're dressed traditionally as a Uyghur, if you have a beard, if you're wearing a veil as a woman or some of the other Uyghur attire, you're actually prohibited from entering government buildings. And I've even seen on the Internet where you're prohibited from boarding buses and public transportation. That is indeed the case?
Yes, and in capital city, Urumqi, they just announced a few weeks ago. And last year, they announced the same rule in the city of Karamai. And so they're expanding all of this. And the control is so stringent because a government like China, it has too much blood in its hands. It kills too many innocent people. So a government like this, it wants to cover up its the crimes against humanity, whether that was the killing of the Han, Tibetan, Mongolian, or the Uyghur people. So what it does is its media is a propaganda machine. It spins lies to deceive their own people, to brainwash and deceive their own people, and at the same time, the international community. That's why China is so afraid, and it doesn't allow foreign journalists, for example, to freely visit Tibet, East Turkestan, to interview Tibetans, Uyghurs, about the conditions on the ground. And it doesn't even allow, in most cases, foreign diplomats to visit these areas. And also, in this information age, Internet age, the Chinese government has the most systematic control of the Internet to prevent any Tibetan, Mongolian, Uyghur, or just a Chinese to post some video of Chinese police brutality or security forces killing innocent people and to write about certain things that happened to them. If a Uyghur posts a video of something happening in his village, of Chinese soldiers killing extrajudicially a Uyghur man, or not, or writes about the harassment or suffering the person faced, the family faced, or the person in prison, the Chinese government immediately arrests that particular Uyghur as for spreading lies, they call. It's a very easy label. Just say they're spreading lies on the Internet, just lock them up. And Uyghurs as Muslims, just like Tibetans, Buddhists, a lot of Americans here, they are Christians. Of course, when you believe in the religion, you want to read about the holy book. For Christians, it's the Bible. For Buddhists, they have their own holy books. And for Muslims, it's the Quran, of course. And so, and for people of faith, you want to teach your religious faith to your own children, children's children, so that the tradition or religious tradition will continue. That's the same thing for the Uyghur people. They are Muslim. Now, of course, they don't believe in anything else. But they want to also teach their children about religion so that they can continue their tradition in spite of the Chinese communist and atheistic onslaught for the past 60 years. And the Chinese government doesn't allow that. Doesn't allow, for example, minors to go to mosque, women to go to mosque, cadres to go to mosque, retired people to go to mosque. Nobody. And the mosques are all heavily controlled. Spies or informers are everywhere. They have CCTV cameras installed inside of mosque compounds to monitor the preacher who talks about religious issues or his sermon, or the people who go there attend the mosques. And interestingly, just a couple of weeks ago, we know what happened in Paris, the attack on the Charlie Hebdo, this magazine.
In France, sure.
Yeah, in France, yeah. Unfortunately, 12 people were killed. And the insult on religion, you know, some people are complaining about the position of that magazine. I don't know too much about that. But the thing is, the insult by the Chinese government against religion is not the Chinese government against an atheist. They don't believe in any religion. They believe the Chinese Communist Party is a god. So Mao wants to be a god at the time. But, of course, they can never be gods. But the thing is, they plant China's atheistic communist flag in a mosque, in a temple, in a church. And they not just a plant. They have a flag-raising ceremony in this house of gods, house of God.
Sure, place of worship. I know when I was there, I mentioned it's been quite a while, of course, since I've been there. I was in Urumqi and Kashgar and other places, Taklamakan Desert. I encountered quite a few mosques where the crescent moon had been removed from the minaret by the government. I'm wondering if that's still the case. I mean, outward signs of religion, the Chinese were removing from the mosques.
They don't have the crescent moon there. And they don't allow, of course, in Islam, of course, Muslims pray five times a day. So there is this clergy who usually, on top of the mosque, they shout saying the time of prayer is now, because to let the people know, so that people will come to mosque or at their home, they pray. And nowadays, of course, people use loudspeakers, but the Chinese government doesn't allow them to do that for the Uyghurs. They cannot do that using loudspeakers or on top of the mosque to call for the time of prayer. And people should know themselves. And the people, again, who can only attend the mosque are very few private business people, maybe, or people who have no job can enter there. Others, no, banned by the Chinese government. And the Chinese government's policies now are extremely anti-religious, whether that's Tibet or for the Uyghurs. And the Chinese security forces not only harass the Uyghur pious religious people and also provoke them to react violently. For example, for the past year, a lot of violent incidents took place, unfortunately, in our homeland. In many of these cases, what happened was the Chinese security force, they are fully armed. In East Turkestan, if you visit, you wouldn't believe that people think China is this great country, economy is great, developing, next superpower, whatnot. But when you really go to Tibet and East Turkestan, you will see the true face of China. That's the real China, not the shiny Beijing, shiny Shanghai, shiny Guangzhou, all that. So when you go to East Turkestan, they have armored vehicles on every street corner. They put several armored vehicles with machine guns on top on Friday, like today. Today is a time of prayer for Muslims at noon. For for Jews, of course, Saturday is Sabbath. They go to their synagogue to pray. For Christians, it's Sunday. For Buddhists, maybe another day. But the thing is, Friday is a day of prayer for the Muslims. So that's what they do. And they basically guard the entrance and the nearby areas by fully armed Chinese soldiers. There, it's like you are watching like a second World War movie, like the Nazi SS are trying to round up the innocent Jews kind of situation. You would see that today. And so the Uyghurs are, of course, they're living in an atmosphere of fear. They're terrified by the heavy military presence there. And East Turkestan has been turned into a police state. The people, they don't care to talk about what's in their heart. They can never complain about Chinese policies. It's not just a talk about independence or separatism or whatnot. It's just a complaint about China's, for example, educational policy, that Uyghur people can no longer speak their own language in school. The Chinese government can arrest and imprison a person like that as a separatist. And the Chinese security forces, especially on the streets, when the Uyghur women, according to our tradition, they wear a scarf. Then the Chinese security police come and just pull the scarf in front of the husband. Then the husband gets mad. Some of them may just go quiet, crying or whatnot. But some, of course, when the honor of your wife is attacked by fully armed police, some man couldn't hold and get upset, either punch the police or get angry. Then right there and then, the Chinese police shoot and kill the Uyghur. The next day, the Chinese state media would say they killed a terrorist or extremist.
Yeah, and I can explore this a little bit further. I know in 2009, quite a few Uyghurs were killed. I want to take a moment here and just remind listeners, this is Connections. I'm Roger Wendell, and my guest this morning is Alim Setov. He's president of the Uyghur American Association, and we're talking about basically the subjugation of the Uyghur people in East Turkestan, which is now part of Western China. We've got a few more minutes here where we can take calls. Gene and others are waiting patiently at 303-442-4242. And I wanted to ask you before we go back to the phones, Aline, can you tell us a little bit about the imprisoned Uyghur scholar Ilham Tohti, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly?
Yes, you are correct. Ilham Tohti is one of the best and brightest Uyghur scholars, who was a professor at the China's Nationalities University in Beijing. And he cares so much about not just the Uyghur people, but China as well. And he understood the complete failure of the Chinese policies toward the Uyghur people because there were inherently colonial and racist policies toward the Uyghur people. But still, he wants to work within the Chinese system. He wants to work with the Chinese people. He wants to build a bridge of understanding and a reconciliation to mildly, not necessarily criticize, to point out the policy mistakes of the Chinese government so that there will be better treatment of the Uyghur people, less complaints from the Uyghur people, better relations between the Uyghur people and Chinese government, and the Uyghur people and the Chinese settlers who are coming to East Turkestan every day. But because of his mild criticism and bravery as a professor in Beijing, speaking to foreign media, expressing his viewpoints peacefully, he was charged by the Chinese government as a separatist last September and sentenced to life. And this is the government we're talking about.
That okay, for clarification, we're talking about life imprisonment for expressing opinions. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay, sorry to interrupt you there. It's an unfortunate situation. And yes. We're going to give out some web information and other resources here towards the end of the program so people can learn more. But phones have been lighting up a little bit. Let's go to Gene, who's been waiting patiently. Gene, good morning. You're on Connections.
Good morning. I wanted to ask, what's the Chinese government attitude towards the traditional culture of Uyghurs as far as music, poetry, dances, and the folk tale, all the traditional culture? That's one question. And the other question is, how about the neighbors? What's the diplomatic relationship and the attitude of the neighbors, like the Mongols, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, all those countries on Western China? How do they look at the struggle of Uyghurs?
Excellent question. Alim?
Yes, thank you, Gene, for your excellent two questions. The first is Uyghur traditional culture. What the Chinese government does is, in its propaganda, it says it treats all people equally. It promotes their cultures, like traditional cultures, languages equally in their media, in their propaganda, in their books. In reality, it's completely to the contrary. But what China does is, if you go to China, if you watch TV, you would see happy Uyghurs dancing and singing, praising Chinese Communist Party. Happy Tibetans and Mongols, they're just, it's like they're living in heaven. It's like China's comes to heaven. So on TV, the Chinese government promotes that. They promote that not because the Chinese government likes Uyghur traditional culture. It wants really to get rid of Uyghur traditional culture and assimilate the Uyghur people and Tibetans others. But what it does is it gives us a facade of respecting ethnic cultures, the traditions, and at the same time to showcase how happy this ethnic minority is. under China's glorious rule. But that's not true. But they're tearing apart every fabric, bit by bit, of Uyghur culture, Tibetan culture, Mongolian culture, even their own Han culture. And the Chinese Communist government has done more damage to their own Han culture than any other previous governments. So the Uyghur culture is, but the Uyghur people, we are a very vibrant, peace-loving, freedom-loving, joyful, happy people. And we have all kinds of dances, all kinds of music, all kinds of songs, and we like them. And we try to continue that on our own, although the Chinese government says that. But also at the same time, the Chinese government is very afraid that Uyghur people will use their traditional culture, music, dance, to express their dissatisfaction with China's colonial and apartheid rule in their homeland. It's the same in Tibet and other countries, other occupied territories. And another is regarding the neighbors, and the neighbors of Uyghurs. Historically, the Uyghur people, Uzbek, Kazakh, Kyrgyz, Turkmen, we are the same people. The Uzbek and Uyghur, there is little or no difference. The language is like British English and American English. So we have no problem understanding each other, talking to each other. Kazakh, Kyrgyz, they are very close. And we can understand 80 to 90% of Kazakh, Kyrgyz language, no problem. So we belong to Central Asia, not China. But after Soviet Union broke up, they became independent states. Of course, the people, maybe a lot of government officials in Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, even Tajikistan, may be very sympathetic to the plight of the Uyghur people. But the issue is Chinese government, after the collapse of Soviet Union, became extremely worried with this kind of either government support or the people support. So China, together with Russia, they established the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And with Shanghai Cooperation Organization, they also, the member states are Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan. So basically, China and Russia, by creating this organization, by giving a little bit military aid and other incentives to the countries to support China's anti-Uyghur agenda and Russia's anti-whatever agenda there. So the Chinese government's agenda is to specifically target the Uyghur people in East Turkestan to further repress so that the neighbors will keep silent. And also, when the Uyghur activists flee China into these neighboring countries, these countries have extradition treaties to deport them back to China. In fact, they did deport many Uyghurs, and most of the Uyghurs deported back to China, either executed or disappeared for good. And but the people in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, they are very supportive because they also suffered tremendously under Soviet communist atheist rule. So they know what we're going through under China's communist atheist rule. They know our pain. They wished one day we'd become an independent state just like them. But they know they're also squeezed between two big powers, Russia and China. So they do not dare to openly support us. But we do see strong support, communal support from the freedom-loving peoples in Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and in all Central Asia.
So we're running a little short on time. Let's try to squeeze in, as it were, one more call. Mark's been waiting patiently. Good morning, Mark. You're on Connections.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to follow up on that real quickly. There is an embassy in Washington, D.C., from the fictitious country of East Kyrgyzstan. And basically, this is a CIA front, and what you're going to be seeing, tragically, in this area is al-Qaeda-type terrorist operations, and basically they're going to be going after the Russian-Chinese pipelines that are going to be going in, through that area soon. And it's going to be a big mess, just like we're seeing with our CIA's support of the neo-Nazis in the Ukraine. Would you please comment? Thank you.
Okay. Aline?
Yeah, I have no information whatsoever about this gentleman's claims.
There is an embassy in Washington, D.C., sir. called the the country of East Kyrgyzstan, which is not a true country, and we actually have an ambassador there from this area.
Mark, unfortunately, Aleem doesn't know much about that, and I'm not familiar with it either. We'll have to take this opportunity to research it further on the Internet.
You will see it in the future, all kinds of Al-Qaeda terrorist-type operations, and this is exactly what it is.
I think, Mark, hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I think, Mark, since you're claiming it is funded by CIA, I think you'd better ask CIA about that instead of me, who has no idea.
And it's tragic.
Okay, it certainly sounds tragic. Aleem, unfortunately, we're running very short on time. It's been an interesting hour, certainly not enough time. Can you give us an idea of how people can learn more and maybe help out if that's their desire? Any books you can recommend? How can people get more involved and learn more about the Uyghur people and their plight in East Turkestan and Western China?
Yes, there are many ways. People can learn about the Uyghurs, of course, you know, if they just go to Google and just type Uyghur, it's either U-Y-G-H-U-R or U-I-G-H-U-R, and they can find our organization, either the Uyghur American Association or World Uyghur Congress or Uyghur Human Rights Project. We have reports on our website. We have daily news and press releases. People can read about them, learn about them, and understand these issues. And if they are interested in helping the Uyghurs, first, I highly recommend Americans to personally go and visit the homeland to understand. And second is, if they want to help the Uyghurs, they can ask their members of Congress or Senate to express a concern to China's human rights violations of the Uyghur people, Tibetans, and others. And if they want to do more, of course, we welcome any kind of contribution, any kind of donation in any effort so that we can do more to expose Chinese crimes against humanity, and we can let the world know what's happening to those peace-loving people who live and suffer under Chinese rule, and we can educate more Americans and more people and help the long-suffering people there. And there are a couple of books about the Uyghur people. One is called The Uyghur Empire. It was about the Uyghur Empire that was established in the 9th century that ruled most of today's China, actually. And also a couple of books about, one book is called Illyu Rebellion by Linda Benson. I think that's a very informative book as well. Unfortunately, there are not many books written about the Uyghur people in the English language, in Chinese, in Uyghur, in Russian, many, but not in English. I think if people Google Uyghur and probably go to Amazon, they may be able to find more upcoming new books about the Uyghur people. But the East-West Center has a number of excellent reports, actually, regarding the current condition of the Uyghur people so they can better understand. And if you want to see Uyghur Uyghur dancing, listen to Uyghur music, and if you just go to YouTube, type Uyghur, you'll find tons of beautiful Uyghur songs, dancing, and everything. Then you will see what kind of people Uyghur people are, just like the Tibetans.
Excellent.
We are not the
excellent.
Bad
and, again, and again, to remind folks, the spelling to make it easier in your search is U-Y-H-G-U-R. That's the Uyghur people. Aleem, thank you so much for appearing on KGNU this morning.
Thank you, Roger, for the invitation.
Excellent. My guest has been Aleem Setov. He's president of the Uyghur American Association. We've had a very quick hour here talking about the plight of the Uyghur people in Western China, East Turkestan. I'm Roger Wendell. I want to thank Ava for ably handling the phones this morning, and want to thank you, our loyal listeners, for your support of this community resource, KGNU Boulder, KGNU Denver. Up next is Dave with the Morning Sound Alternative. Have a great day and a great weekend. Take care.
Talk.
Talk show.
Talk back.
Talk radio.
Talk your talk.
Walk your talk.
KGNU Talk.
Call in.
Call in and talk.
Call in and connect.
Connections.
Friday mornings at 8:30
on KGNU.